Quite an experience to live in fear, isn't it? That's what it is to be a slave. I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. All those moments will be lost in time. Like tears.
I'm Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard! Today, my guest is author Nicole Corner Stace. Her novels include Archivist Wasp, Latchkey, and Firebreak. Her newest novella, Flight and Anchor, comes out in June. We have a great show today. And yes, by the time you listen to this, I will probably be rereading Latchkey. So it surprises me that more people don't know your name and your work, but just in case, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I mean, a lot of people don't know who I am. I kind of like it that way, actually. So I'm Nicole, and I have written a number of books that are all kind of semi-accidentally within the same interconnected world. It started out with Archivist Wasp, and then the sequel Latchkey, and those are about basically the ghost of a near future super soldier and a far future post-apocalyptic ghost hunting priestess and their adventures into the underworld. And I wrote those, and then I wrote Firebreak and Jillian versus Parasite Planet, which is a kid's book. I wanted to try my hand at one of those. And then Flight and Anchor, which is coming out soon, is basically a tie-in prequel novella to Firebreak that I basically wrote for my own amusement and somehow is now like a traditionally published book. And no one is more surprised about that than me.
And yeah, it's a very fun book. Every time I read anything of yours, I just want to read Firebreak again, so I do. And Firebreak's kind of dark, and then I read Flight and Anchor, and it's just it's more lighthearted.
Yes.
Yeah, and avoid spoilers if you can, and if you can't avoid spoilers, that's okay. But in Flight and Anchor, why did you want to tell that specific story about 6 and 22?
So basically, after I wrote Firebreak, I had a lot of people emailing me and DMing me on Twitter and saying things like, oh, I really like this story, but what I really would have liked is if there had been more of 6 and 22. And I'm right there with you. Like, I would have loved to have put more of them in the book, but it just didn't work out that way because of just the way the story was told from the first person narration, and her interactions with them were by nature very, very limited. And I didn't want to write it like as an omniscient narration. So I had to limit that, and I didn't really want to. So I started just writing some other stuff for those two side characters just for fun. I had a novelette, a long short story on Uncanny Magazine called Pathfinding, which is about the two of them when they're about 15 years old. And then I wrote that. And then I kind of had kicking around in my head still the idea that I wanted to do something with them when they were even younger. And I just sort of ignored that because I was like, nobody's going to want to read a story about kids if it's not a kid's story. And I don't know. And so I just kind of ignored it. And then at one point, years after I had this idea kicking around in my head, I had the idea to reread The Boxcar Children, which was a very formative book for me when I was about 5 years old. And I was thinking, like, it would be really interesting if someone wrote a story kind of like that, but not in, you know, the early 1900s where all of this this stuff that you can, you know, they go out and salvage things in the dump, and it's all reusable because it's all made of glass and ceramic and wood and metal and these, you know, these durable materials. What would that kind of story look like in a setting like now, or even further in the future, where everything is like single use disposable plastic garbage? And I just kind of sat there with this idea and didn't think I was volunteering myself to do that. Just kind of like, oh, if someone else did that, I'd like to read it, which is pretty much how all my ideas start. Just, I'd like to read this, but it's not there. So
yeah, it's very much,
I'll write it.
Yeah, it's very much write the story that you wish that you want to read.
Yeah. And that's the advice really that I give people who come to me for writing advice for whatever reason. I don't know why they do that. There are other people who can give better advice.
Yeah, but nobody, we come to you for advice because nobody writes books the way you do.
I do write things very self-indulgently because I personally want to read them. But then I had this like Boxcar Children reread percolating in my head. And then I was like, wait a minute, I have a setting that would be perfect for this. And I have like these two characters who have a, you know, when they were kids, they have a history within the canon material as it exists of running away from this life that they have that they hate. So it's like, okay, I guess I'm doing this now. And so I wrote it for my own amusement, and it took like no time at all to write it. And it changed very, very little from the draft because I was just having fun. And I put it on my Patreon, and it just kind of existed there for a while. And my agent at one point was like, oh, so what are you working on? And I told her like, okay, well, this was a very stupid idea, but I'm just doing it for fun. I will do something more serious at some point, I swear. And I explained it to her, and she's like, you know, actually just let me see that for a sec. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, sure. You know, good luck. And so she got it turned into a book, but it really was just, it was for me, but it was also for the readers of Firebreak who wanted more of those two characters, because I also wanted more of those two characters. And it was really just a case of all of these random little things coming together and colliding in a way that was actionable, which I still don't know how that works, but it's like one of the coolest parts of the writing process for me. It's just like, I don't understand how it happened, but it happened, and I'm glad it did.
And I love that you wrote it just for fun. You wrote it for yourself. And in that there's no pressure. You're just playing. You're just having fun in a sandbox. And now we're here.
I honestly think that, at least for my personal preferences, I would love to read more books that are just people messing around in sandboxes because they love them. This is why, like, I don't write fan fiction, but I defend vehemently people who write fan fiction, because that's what you're doing. You're playing in a sandbox. You're having fun. And, you know, why not? Like, I don't understand why that gets denigrated just because it's, you know, somebody else's IP. Who cares?
You're
honestly,
just,
honestly,
yeah. Know. And I was thinking the same thing of, you know, what a perfect sandbox is. And but now I do have to ask, how would you feel if people wrote fan fiction about your work?
I would be flattered. Like I wouldn't be able to read it, but I would be very, very flattered that it exists. Cause I mean, like you're taking time out of your day to write stuff about characters that you love that happen to be mine. Like that's, I don't even know. That's
you
it's
have
a lot. It's cool.
You have created characters that people really do love.
I'm so glad. Like that, and because and it's always interesting to me because I always write everything first and foremost because I want to see it. Like 06 and 22 are very much something that I've always looked for in fiction, and I've never really been able to find it, which is like a platonic male female partnership where it never turns romantic, it never turns sexual. I mean, obviously they're 12 years old now, but even, you know, in Firebreak, when they're like 20.
Right, yeah. They're adults in Firebreak.
Right. Right.
I'm like, it would be super weird and not right if they hooked up.
I don't ever have any of my characters hook up because I really need that representation to exist. I think it would benefit a lot of people, and not just, you know, like I'm aromantic and asexual, and I write those characters for other aromantic asexual people, but also for everyone else, because I think that we do our relationships out here in the real world a great disservice when we go into them with this assumption that if you have a close male-female friendship, you're going to hook up eventually. It's just, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. And it ruins actual friendships.
I've had those friends.
Same.
And what you describe is exactly what happened. And I wish that it hadn't. I'd like to still be friends with those people.
Right. And unfortunately, like, what, not to get on a tangent, but this is like one of my favorite soapboxes to climb up on. If we have a second for me to do that. Okay. Just that every time I've seen on social media or wherever somebody saying something like, oh, you know, I wish more of these relationships did exist in books. It's too bad that writers always put them in. I just want to say it's not always the writer's choice. Like, I have, since I write this stuff and I'm vocal about it on social media, I do have a lot of other writers reach out to me and tell me their stories. And often what happens is they are literally pressured at an industry level to write these things in. I've had people come to me with, like, they show me, you know, like screenshots from their rejection letters or their like revise and resubmit letters. And, you know, things like, it doesn't make sense for this to be a friendship. They should either be a couple or they should be siblings. Like, get the hell out. Like,
that's
and this
weird.
Is agents and editors saying this. It's like, and I've seen many, many stories from authors who have been pressured to the point where they're basically told, and I was told this with Archivist Wasp, like, either add in a romance or go away, essentially, or revise and resubmit. And I had to walk away from offers with Archivist Wasp. And I've seen other people being put in that position even now, you know, almost 10 years later. No, actually it is about 10 years later since that was on sub. And it's just, it shouldn't be that way.
No, it's whatever relationship the author wants to write, like, mm-hmm. that's kind of sacred to their story.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's pivotal. It's like, it's what the story is about. And this idea that, like, you can't have a valid character arc without adding in a romance, or the only way that you're going to show that these two people really care about each other is with romance. Unless, you know, romance is off the table because, you know, like, one of them is asexual or one of them is gay or whatever it is. It's gross. I don't like it. Not to say that they shouldn't, like, there shouldn't, not to say that there shouldn't be asexual and other queer characters in fiction. Obviously there should, but there should be this too, where there's the possibility of a romance and you just don't do it because it's not necessary. It's not.
Right. It's not needed for part of the story. And we can tell these beautiful, action stories and just these, like, mm-hmm. literal ride or die relationships mm-hmm. just yeah, without exactly. it. And it's, mm-hmm. I'm really happy you're writing these stories.
Thank you. It's important to me to do it. If only so that, like, other people who are trying to write theirs have other published, like, traditionally published books that they can look at and be like, oh, well, this got traditionally published, so maybe mine can too. And, like, I did have a fight on my hands with Archivist Wasp, but I really haven't since. So I think things are changing for the better, at least for me, for whatever reason. But I have heard these other things recently from other people. So I don't know. The industry needs to catch up with just the variety of stories that we can tell and how we don't actually need this antiquated template to show that characters can develop or, you know, care about each other. It's so strange to me.
With all the attention that Firebreak got when it came out, I don't think you're ever going to have an issue ever again publishing anything.
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know.
I remember watching just the, like, I mean, it certainly says something about the circle of friends that I have on Twitter, but just the emotional reactions to that book, like my emotional reaction to that book. And yeah, that book needed to come out and it needed to be published when it was.
I'm so really glad. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Yeah, I almost didn't write that. It kind of just sat in my brain for 3 years and I didn't let myself write it because I was like, no, I'm not going to be able to do it justice. I really like this idea. Someone else could do it better. I really just want to read it.
No one else can do that idea because it's, you know, it touches on other things that you've written. Like, I'm eventually going to get this, going to get my sentences back towards like Easter eggs and things like that. But like that particular story in Firebreak, I don't think anyone else could have written that. Like, it had to come from you. It had to. And it was now here's me going off on a tangent. There's a particular scene in Firebreak that every time I get to that scene, it's it has something to do with it's been a hot minute since I read Firebreak. Mal is out and she's helping some people get somewhere. Like, I don't want to give a spoiler. And so you see that scene from her point of view, and there's things happening, and she's overhearing conversations of other people in this scene. And like every time I read that scene, it's almost like I'm reading it for the first time, because it's, wait a minute, this sounds familiar. And I have to go back and read Latchkey. And then I have to go back and read Archivist Wasp. Because there's all these little Easter eggs and all these connections. So because of Easter eggs like that, nobody but you could have written Firebreak.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Retro Rockets. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Today I'm talking with author Nicole Cornerstace about her new novella, Flight and Anchor. You can listen to this episode and others at retrorocketspodcast.podbean.com. Join us to chat on Twitter. We're at Retro Rockets Pod. So I finally pulled this back to like some fun little Easter eggs that I wanted to talk about. So I was lucky enough to get an arc of Flight and Anchor. And I remember I was maybe not that far into it, maybe 15 or 20 pages into it. And I just kind of had it sitting on the kitchen table. And I'm finally like really looking at the cover art. And I see it's very cool cover art, by the way.
It is. They did a great job with it.
Yes. And I see the word Sabrina. And and I, like, my family was like, Andrea, you are squealing. What is wrong with you? And I was like, oh, Sabrina shows up in here somewhere. So she shows up and I'm absolutely laughing my head off because she meets 6 and 22 and she's like, you are not like other preteens that I have met. I'm not sure what to do with you. And her humanity just cracks me up. So does Jillian versus Parasite Planet take place in the same world, or is this just like a parallel Easter egg?
So the thing that happens with these books as I write them is I don't actually intend to keep writing them. They just keep falling out of me. So long story short, yes, it's the same world. Long story slightly longer. I literally, when I wrote Archivist Wasp, I thought that was going to be it. It was a standalone and I was going to leave these characters alone forever. And then it just kind of kept sort of snowballing away out of my control. But I wanted to write with Jillian versus Parasite Planet. I wanted to write a kid's book for my kid. And I wanted to write a hard sci-fi story with a girl protagonist. Those were the things that I sat down to do. And that was all I knew I was doing. And as I was writing it, I realized it was the same friggin' world and there was nothing I could do about it. I tried to change it and it refused to be changed. So it's the same world. Some years before Firebreak, so the idea that Sabrina is still there. And for everyone who hasn't read Jillian versus Parasite Planet, Sabrina is the semi-autonomous bio-reconnoitering intelligent nanobot array. She's a space probe made up of nanobots, and she's intelligent and she's snarky and she's addicted to cartoons. And she's kind of like almost like the spunky animal sidekick for our anxiety having lost in space 12 maybe year old protagonist, Jillian. And again, it was just another case of like, I really liked this side character. This side character was a lot of fun for me to mess with. The illustrator for Jillian versus Parasite Planet just did an incredible job with all of Sabrina's transformations. Scott Brown, he was great. I just wanted to put her somewhere else, but I did not expect her to be in this story. And then she just showed up.
She just showed up.
Okay, hi. She just showed up. Yeah.
I mean, she's a fantastic thing to find when you're just like digging through the basement looking for, you know, maybe I'll find something useful down here.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with me is I don't plot anything ever. I literally, like they say, there are like plotters and pantsers, and I am 3,000 million percent a pantser. I don't plot anything. And so I just kind of, the way that my process goes is I just kind of like watch the movie of it play out in my head, and I just type what I'm seeing.
And, I love and that
Sabrina
so much.
Showed up. Sabrina showed up, and I was like, all right, guess you're in this story too, but I don't care because I'm just writing this for me. I don't have to care if traditional publishing thinks this is silly because nobody's ever going to see it.
And she's great. You know, just like her reactions to people and her expectations of how people are, like she's kind of like wakes up in this world and it's so drastically different from when we last met her that I'm waiting for her to say to people, like, what is wrong with you? Why are you being so serious all the time?
Right. She should.
She should.
Somebody needs to.
Yeah. We need to see more Sabrina.
I'd love to write more Sabrina. I don't really know what to do with her, but
I know. Yeah.
I feel just, like really she lends herself to like a visual medium, like because of all of her shape shifting.
Yeah.
And but I can't draw stick figures. So this is not something that is within my purview in any way. It's weird. Like I'm super visual with my process, but like I my brain and my hands don't talk to each other unless I'm typing. I cannot draw. It's frustrating.
I see her as playing a lot of pranks on people.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And just, you know, being that pranky 14-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So, I may have to write, like, some Sabrina fanfic.
That would be great.
Even though I could talk about Sabrina for the next half an hour, I guess we should also maybe talk about some other things. 8 years ago for some, I don't remember when, I was first introduced to your work through Mike Allen at Mythic Delirium, and he had published Latchkey.
Yes.
And so he's like, hey, Andrea, do you want to read and review Latchkey? And I said, this looks hella cool. And then he says, oh, by the way, it's a second book in a series. But the first book is from a different publisher, so see if you can get a copy of the first book. And it was in print. I was able to get Archivist Wasp. So this is kind of an industry question because I just go to the bookstore, I buy books, I just go to the library, I get books. I don't know how any of the industry stuff works. Even though a lot of your novels are in the same world, connected worlds, your books are published by different publishers. So how does that promotion work? Like if you're promoting Firebreak, do you talk about Tachyon Publishers? If you're promoting Flight and Anchor, do you talk about Saga Press? How does that part of this even work?
You know, I don't actually know anyone else who has gone through publishing multiple things within the same world the way I have, which is kind of completely by the seat of my pants and by accident. Like I can give kind of the backstory of how all that went down, if that's helpful.
Yeah, if you want, sure.
All right. So basically I published Archivist Wasp with Small Beer. And honestly, like to be completely full disclosure, like this is very much a story about like who you know, basically, and getting help from people who are more established in the industry. Because I was sending Archivist Wasp around to all these different agents. And nobody wanted to represent it, which meant that I wasn't really going to be able to sell it anywhere. And then I was at dinner at ReaderCon with Ellen Kushner and Isabeau Wills. And Ellen introduced me to Isabeau, who I was a fan of her work that I've read. And Isabeau wanted to read my thing, my manuscript. I said, sure, I let her. And she basically went and talked it up to Gavin and Kelly at Small Beer. And they just emailed me out of the blue, like, hey, we'd like to publish your book. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? And then I was going to publish Latchkey with them, but we just kind of went in two different directions about like how we wanted the story to be told. And so we just decided it wasn't going to work. And I was kind of left with this manuscript that I didn't really know what to do with. And again, you know, I had a friend in publishing, Mike Allen, who he was like, I'll publish it. So I was like, sure. And then the other things went through my agent like a normal person. But you know, I do like to do like full disclosure with that, because it is very important in this industry, like to get help from more established writers and to offer help to less established writers, which I try to do as much as I can. Because I have seen some really horrific pulling the ladder up behavior from people who are a lot more established than me, and it's not cool. But anyway, so I don't know really what the proper etiquette is in terms of like, should I mention those other books or pretend they don't exist or whatever. No one has ever told me to stop. So I typically do mention them together because they go together. And like when I did a giveaway recently of a copy of Flight and Anchor on my Twitter, and I put it with Firebreak. And I said, like, that way, if you haven't read Firebreak, you can catch up and understand what's going on. If you have, you can level out a wobbly table or something. Because, I mean, they do go together. And, you know, whatever happens on the industry side of things, until they tell me to stop, I'm going to keep doing it. I don't really see why they would, though, because, I mean, the only thing that would happen is that other people might become aware of or interested in the books that they've published as well, and kind of, you know, rising tide, all boats, etc.
Mm-hmm. And it's the interactions I've had with Tachyon over the years, you know, they're just super friendly, nice people. Mm-hmm. Mike yeah. Allen is like the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, yeah, I can't imagine any of them would be bothered by it. And the editor that I worked with at Saga isn't even there anymore, so I don't think anybody's going to care.
Yeah, and everything in publishing, it's so funny. Things either move very, very slow or very, mm-hmm. very fast. You know, it'll take a long time to see the book on the shelf, and then 10 yes. minutes later, half the staff has turned over.
This is true. Firebreak was actually supposed to come out a year earlier than it did, and I kind of had like a little countdown going because I was really excited about this book. And then I got a call saying it was going to be delayed by an entire frigging year. And that was a very bad day for me. I was not happy.
That's like climb under the blankets and cry for 6 hours kind of day.
Yes. Yes. But it worked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, the industry is a messy industry to work in. But, you know, it gets stuff done eventually.
So we kind of touched on this earlier, but to formally touch on it, do you have other mm-hmm. stories about 6 and 22 that you want to tell? And like, I know 6, I know she'd love the attention, but
she would. It's true.
Does 22 really want more stories told about him? He doesn't really seem to like the spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. I don't really know. Like right now I'm kind of informally working on the third and presumably final Archivist Wasp book. Which, I mean, it's not even really necessarily spoilers anymore, because I think this got kind of widely figured out when Firebreak came out, but they are in Archivist Wasp and Latchkey. They're dead. They have been dead for a very, very, very long time, because this is like a gazillion years in the future, and they're ghosts. And they work with this ghost hunter wasp to find each other, basically, because 06 is lost in the underworld and 22 wants to find her because they're besties, and that's what besties do.
And 22 will always find her.
Yeah.
Like
I
that's,
think so.
That's, you know, she's going to go off and have her adventures. And it just kind of struck me. Can you imagine the chaos that 6 and Sabrina would get up to together?
Yeah.
But
crossed my mind.
But like, even death is not going to stop him. He's mm-hmm. he's always going to be there for her, and he's always going to find her. And mm-hmm. I love that.
That is definitely what I wanted to convey. Yeah. And in the third Archivist Wasp book, which is kind of in chapters on my Patreon right now, they are separate. There's two points of view in that one, which is Wasp and also 22, who's just called the ghost in those books because nobody can remember his name.
Mm-mm. And I remember that was kind of a thing online was, we're just never going to know his
yeah,
name.
Yeah, sorry, guys. It's probably not going to happen. That's official statement from me for anybody who still cares.
It kind of keeps him mysterious, though, that even he doesn't know his name. Like, is his name, you know, does he have these memories like buried in his head of, you know, somebody calling him one syllable or two syllables?
Right.
And it just, it, for me at least, it adds this neat mystery.
Well, I'm glad you. It's like this is interesting divide between people who really do appreciate that and people who are upset with me. Actively upset.
Oh, I'm not upset.
I'm getting that you're in the other camp. Yeah. And I like that.
I like those mysteries about characters. Like, I really love it when authors, I heard someone say this at a convention, I don't know how many years ago, but it was, you know, tell the writer just less than what they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And even if that mystery is never going to be solved, like it's like a little bit of closure to know that it's never going to be solved, but it's also kind of keeps the mystery going to know that it's never going to be solved.
The thing is with him that I found is that after I had written him into a couple of books, being Archivist Wasp and Latchkey, that I tried throughout both of those books to try to come up with a name for him, but anything I tried to just like randomly glue on him, it wasn't going to work.
I can't think of any name that would fit him. Like sometimes, you know, when you're trying to name a character, you're like, oh yeah, that name fits that person.
Right. Like everybody else in those books, I knew their names. I in all of the books, like they kind of came with their name tags on. But this friggin' guy, I couldn't do it. And when Archivist Wasp came out around the same time as the movie Fury Road, the Mad Max movie, and they actually it got compared a lot to Fury Road by reviewers. And I loved that because Fury Road is great. But, you know, in the end of that, you know, everybody knows it's a Mad Max movie. Everybody knows the guy's name is Max, but he doesn't say that throughout the movie at all. He doesn't talk to Furiosa about that, even though they're, you know, they're working together and they're having this wonderful, you know, awkward alliance relationship that just does things to my heart. I like it a lot. And then at the very end, he tells her his name. And I'm watching that and I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. I can't do that for people. Sorry, I don't know. I don't know the answer, but... yeah, I like leaving him nameless personally.
Me too.
And, well, good. Thank you. I feel vindicated now.
Awesome. Awesome. So we've talked a bunch about stuff happening on Twitter, and you've got chapters on your Patreon. For folks that want to read those chapters on your Patreon, for folks that want to follow you on Twitter, how do we find you?
I'm not really all that active on social media anymore. When everybody left Twitter a while ago, or, you know, not everybody, but lots of people left Twitter a while ago, I kind of took that as an excuse to like back off of social media, which was actually great for my mental health. I highly recommend it. But I am on there and I do update sometimes. My name on there is Wirewalking, all one word. And I mean, obviously all one word is Twitter, but like nothing else there. Well, not like a dash or anything.
Oh, like an underscore or something.
Yeah, nothing like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, and my link to my Patreon is, I believe, still in my bio there. And there at least used to be links to some stories that I have that aren't about these guys, but aren't available anywhere else because I didn't want to like let anybody edit them because I wanted to leave them the way they are. On my website, which is just NicoleCornerStace.com. And yeah, I didn't really move to a different social media. I might someday, but I don't feel super motivated to do that. So it's unlikely. I am a hermit at heart and I would live in a cave if I could.
I've just been too lazy to explore other social media.
There's also that. Is good.
When it comes to the internet, I'll admit it. I'm lazy.
Yep.
So
same.
It's I'll wait for, you know, all the other social media sites to kind of eat each other and we'll figure out which one the winner is. And then if I'm feeling not lazy that day, I'll go get set up over there. So
this is viable tactic. That's solid. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just be lazy. Mm-hmm. And we got a couple minutes left. Anything else you want to talk about or books or short stories you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, man. Oh, this is the kind of question that makes my entire brain just go blank.
Oh. anything fun that you've read recently that you like?
I've mostly been reading nonfiction lately. Hey, that's okay. I'm gonna be completely useless here.
No. It doesn't have to be fiction. Could be. I mean, I recently read a cookbook. It was great.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Why am I blanking on book titles? Oh, no. every time. This is like what happens when I walk into a bookstore and I suddenly forget everything I wanted to buy.
I have to take a piece of paper into the bookstore with me.
Yes.
Or like I'll screenshot stuff on my phone and then just give my phone to the clerk of, I want this.
Mm-hmm.
But I do the same thing when I go into a bookstore. I can't even like remember the names of authors that I like.
Right.
It's just, right, like,
I just go in there and I'm like, ooh, shiny. Exactly. And then my brain just stops functioning.
That is exactly it. I walk into like a big library or a bookstore. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And it's like, if I was a raven, like those would be my bits of tinfoil. It's just all of those books, fiction, nonfiction, doesn't matter. I'm just like in awe of being surrounded by all of that.
Yep. Same. Yes. Yeah, no, I'm still blanking. Sorry, my brain is completely toast today.
Totally okay. It's a comfortable, lazy Saturday afternoon. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me this afternoon. I know you don't do a lot of interviews, so I feel really fortunate.
No, it was great. You asked good questions.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through a Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets. Thank you.